September 3, 2021, it's the Watch from Pedro Show. for Pedro Show. Happy Friday. Started the show off with Nancy with the laughing face, John Coltrane. And after that, Krakatau?
Yeah, Krakatau, yeah.
Okay. You could tell people I ain't man alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. You like that, huh? Your way of pronouncing your name so I don't fuck it up. Raoul Bjorkenheim?
You can pronounce it like that. That's the English language way of pronouncing it. That's fine.
Okay.
Because in Sweden, it's a Swedish name, and, yeah. And here it's pronounced Bjorkenheim.
Whoa.
So there's an
wrong
accent on the first syllable. So it's Björk.
Okay.
You know, like the singer, the Icelandic singer, Björk. So it's like Bjorkenheim. It has the same word root. It means like home of the birches.
Well, what I remember was a tennis player.
Borg, that was Björn Borg.
Oh, okay. Well, it was a long time ago. My memory is terrible.
It's all Swedish, man. It's all
Swedish.
Yeah,
but
no
Sweden's great pad. Everybody's got a great pad and a great language, and they don't need Watt to destroy it, so that's why I asked you.
Don't worry about it, man.
Okay, thank you, Raoul. In fact, one of my Missing Man drummers, Raoul, but he don't have the O. But I know Raoul Welsh, a famous movie director, has the... Yeah, it's trippy.
Yeah, and now we have a great film director called Raoul Peck, who did that fantastic.
That one too, right.
He's great. He you know, he's done great stuff. The James Baldwin documentary that he made, that I Am Not Your Negro. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't, but I know about it, and I've read Mr.
That's
Baldwin's,
really good.
Mr.
That's
Baldwin's
excellent.
Work is very, very happening. Ended up living in France. I'm curious about your journey through music. Can you bring us your earliest musical memory?
Well, I was very lucky because my mother started out as a ballet dancer, and when she was just like, I guess in her late teens, she was in a British dance company, and then she was discovered by it was called the Marquis de Cuevas ballet company in Monaco, and they actually did world tours, and then one of the pieces they did was Petrushka. You know, Stravinsky's Petrushka.
Yeah.
So as a kid, we'd listen to the record, you know, and she'd tell me the story, and I was always entranced by it. I thought it was a great story. And, you know, so from the first time as a kid, I was listening to music, and she always listened to music a lot. And, she was also a very, very, she did musicals. She was a singer and an actress. So I had music in the home, you know, right from the first day, mainly classical music and stuff. And then at the end of the 60s, I started getting more, of course, into rock when I was in high school. So I gave up the other music, you know, for rock. And like my first rock record was Jethro Tull's Stand Up. And then from there, you know, just went on very naturally, like 69, 70. I still had a chance to go to the Fillmore East in New York when I was living in New York City. And got to see some really great, like I saw B.B. King, and I saw Albert King, and I saw Edgar Winter's White Trash, and Billy Preston, and people like that. So that was when I was 14, like that. And I heard and saw, I think that's a really important thing, to see also amazing musicians, you know, in action. Because then when you see them and you hear them at the same time, then, well, it's that, as you know, it's the whole experience that you really understand what's going on. And when you see some great guitar playing, And you hear it at the same time, then it goes right into your, you know, it's your DNA. It becomes part of your DNA right away.
The bass player, Glenn Cornick, first one for Jethro Tull. He lived a few years here in my Pedro town.
Really?
And then I wouldn't shit you.
No, I know that. I know that. Okay. So tell me, did you get to know him?
I didn't get to know him, but I met him a couple times. He was a very nice man, and I loved his playing in that band. Especially when there were more bluesies. And then you said Monaco. I got to play there once. But that one gig, it was helping the Stooges. I got to meet Dusty Hill.
Wow.
Great bass man. Inspiring to me. I was a big ZZ Top fan when I was young. Can I ask you this? The pads you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
Well, I guess when I was 8 years old, we had in school, we had the chance to pick up an instrument, and so I started playing violin. So I played violin for a year, but it wasn't really what I would generally cry before the lesson because they were so, you know, violin is a pretty hard instrument to play, and I think for anybody in their environment to hear somebody screeching away on a violin out of tune. This must be pretty bad. But so I gave it up after a year. But then I started getting into trumpet, believe it or not. So when I was between, I guess, 9 and 11, I was playing trumpet. And I was even in the Boy Scouts. I was living actually in California for the year that when Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. I remember I was living in Santa Monica. In Brentwood. I was living in Brentwood. And I was part of a Boy Scout troops, and I was the bugler. So I would always play, you know, the reveille, and then I'd play taps. So that was like an early experience of music, I guess, too, in some strange way.
No, and, music is music.
Music is music, and that has a function. You know, that has a function.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, bugle, you know, no walkie-talkies and leashes and shit, so they use that shit to communicate. My papa's a sailor, so there's certain kinds of signals. When to conk, when to wake up, when to charge, you know, this kind of shit with trumpet melody lines. Let me ask you this. First record you bought with your own money?
Well, that was Jethro Tull Stand Up.
Oh, but I think, okay. You bought it with your own money.
After that, it was Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Woodstock. I think that was the second record. And then the third record was The Band, you know, the Brown album. So that was the music that we were listening to at the time. But then, you know, it didn't take very long. I was going to a boarding school in Pennsylvania, and I had a black roommate who then one day said, you know, you want to listen to some really hip stuff? And then he played me Jimi Hendrix. And well, that started that off. You know, there was Band of Gypsies. And I remember that bass line from Who Knows was the one that started me off really into that thing. And I think that, you know, even to this day, if anybody asks me, like, who's the best, you know, I'm sort of associated with free jazz. So if people ask me, what's the best free jazz guitar solo you can think of? I say, well, it's Machine Gun, you know.
But Jimmy, you know, Hendrix, there's a great quote from Jimmy. She's talking about Mitch Mitchell. He goes, he's my Elvin Jones.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Fucking bitching, right? What was the first gig you saw?
The first gig? Well, let me think about this, because, see, I used to go to classical concerts, because my mom would take me to classical concerts.
That's still a gig.
So, I mean, I would see things, but probably one of the first, like rock and blues concerts that I saw, believe it or not, was Rolling Stones at the Helsinki Olympic Stadium in 1969, I think. And the opening act was Junior Wells Blues Band. So I heard those two bands, but I mean, you know, it was a big stadium and I wasn't very close up. So it was, you know, an incredible experience. And I still remember the feel of it. And it was a beautiful summer day and the sun was shining and then they played their set. You know, that was I guess it was like the Gimme Shelter period. And, that was really something. That was pretty awesome. And then I guess from then on, I got my first guitar when I was like, that was 69, I guess, or 70.
I want to get into that, but first I want to play this some more of this Krakatau you gave me, Matinal.
Cool. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with Krakatau with Matinal. Then King Champion sounds out of Netherlands with Libra, Libra, Libra. Brand new from Pete Kane. Pat Kane at D.C. area. He's got a new album, Theme for Full Moon. Love it. Obama's Prendon from D.C. area. In the Desert with Clayton. And then finally, some more Krakatau. Little Big Horn. Kind of a big gig happened there. So, yeah, how did you jump on the guitar?
It was very simple because when I was going to high school, I was a fairly like pimply kid who saw that all the guys that, you know, were attracting the girls who were playing guitars and singing, and it seemed to make sense. And I always loved music, so there was a guy that showed me like the first three chords, like a G major, a C major, and a D major chord. And that said, that was fine. So then I learned a whole bunch of songs. And I think that the first song that I ever learned was from the band Big Pink. Music from Big Pink was Long Black Veil. I can still sing it. So that was like the first song that I ever learned on the guitar. And then I learned a lot of songs very fast, actually, because I just picked them up by ear.
Where did you get this guitar?
I got it in Doylestown, Bucks County, Pennsylvania, okay. In a store. It cost $25. It was like playing a cheese grater because the strings were so high, and I didn't know that they could be lower, you know. So I thought, oh my God, this is really hard to play.
Okay, and then, like, how'd that happen? Like, your mom took you to the store, and I want one of those.
No, I went to the store myself. I saved up. I had an allowance. So it was like a few bucks a week, and then I saved it up, and it was $25. So I took quite a few weeks of not buying any candy or anything, you know, unnecessary, or Mad magazines. And then I finally got into the guitar.
And it was acoustic, I'm assuming, right?
Oh, yeah. It was the cheapest, you know, rottenest type of acoustic guitar, as I said, with the strings so high that you could cut cheese with it.
Oh, yeah. We call them William Tell, you know, like bow and arrow. You could stick your fucking arm between the strings and the fretboard.
Exactly. Oh, man. That's exactly the type.
Maybe when you're starting, it's kind of good because you build up some strength.
Well, I got my calluses real fast. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, it happened with me with a $100 bass when I started. Well, I didn't know basses had bigger strings. Because you're talking about arena rock, right? Well, we're so far away, it looked like a guitar, you know. I just thought they had skinnier necks. You know, just looking at the pictures and shit. And then, because I had no experience with club culture, I couldn't get close enough to actually see. Wow, look at that. In fact, the first time I saw a bass, I couldn't believe you could play it. It looked like cables. So what about... Well, you were man alone. Well, this guy showed you some stuff. So did you start taking lessons, or are you just man alone and autodidact?
Well, I think that when I bought my guitar, it was like this music store, and then they gave I got a chord chart that came with the guitar, you know, one of these real cheap, 10-page things that shows you all the main chords. And then I started, you know, learning songs. People at school, I'd say, hey, how do you play that song? And then they'd show me, and then I'd learn the chords. So, you know, I learned like two chords a week, and then gradually I was able to play things. At one point I could play Arlo Guthrie's Alice's Restaurant all the words. I sang the whole thing. My father used to say, Raul, can you play Alice's Restaurant? He used to pronounce it Alice's Restaurant.
It was in Santa Monica.
No, actually, because my father was living in Finland. Both my father and mother are Finnish. And we were living in Los Angeles when I was born, but then they got divorced, and my father moved back to Finland. So I spent my life pretty much, my young life, shuttling back and forth between the two. So I got a little bit of both cultures, you know, the American culture and then the Finnish culture.
Great, great, great. I've been to several times. I was almost killed in Pori.
Oh, yeah?
A big storm.
What happened?
A big old storm. It was nothing to do with Finnish people. In fact, a young security man saved my life. He got me because I had a bad knee. I couldn't get off the stage. Everybody ran. It tore. It ended up killing people. It broke the plane of the Iron Maiden people. And it was heavy. But I have a lot of good experience in Finland, man. I love playing there.
Yeah.
Good place. And you know what Slive Stone said? He said, it's not where you're from. It's where you're at. So you don't pick those things. But if you're fortunate like you, wide experiences so happen. So what about since you're doing school stuff or music stuff with school friends, do you get into the, you know, in the afternoon you do the basement band, the bedroom band, the garage band?
Sure, of course. We did that. I mean, I don't know how many stereo speakers I've blown by playing, you know, you jump start, you put the alligator clips at the end of the guitar cord and you somehow hook them into the innards of an old radio or something, you know, in the days when they were still tube amplifiers. And then for a little while it sounded great, but then suddenly you'd blow the speakers and then you'd just not tell anybody that you were doing what you were doing, you know.
There's a certain kind of smell when you burn up electrical stuff, especially transformers with the windings, when they burn. Well, yeah, that's the insulation. Yeah. Ooh, that's the bad smell. So, but you guys start jamming, like, I'm not saying these bands did any gigs or stuff, but, you know, just having fun, right?
Well, I mean, I started playing guitar, I guess in 1969, right? And then when I moved to Finland to go to high school when I was 15 in 1971. So then I already by that time I played a little bit more guitar and I could play a couple of songs and I could play like the bass line to who knows. And as a matter of fact, in the early days I wanted to be a bass player because like I was, I'd be listening to Cream and I wouldn't be, so, I mean, all respect to Eric Clapton, but I'd be listening to Jack Bruce
and Jim Baker, the way they were playing together. Incredible influence on me. You know, I was playing in Mobile the night he passed away. We lost him. It hit me hard. I found out right before the gig, and it was one of the worst gigs I ever played. And then, yeah, that guy was. So you were listening to the bass. That's great to know. Because, you know, in our days when we were younger, bass was where you put your retarded friend. It was like the hierarchy was so bad about bass players. And drummers, too. I'm glad it's gotten more. Like you said, all the girls wanted the guitar player who sings. Right.
Well, I'd say put it this way that a friend of mine that we used to jam with, we'd jam in his bedroom, like, and I think it was his speakers that I blew basically. So we eventually decided to start playing properly, and I said, okay, we're going to save up money and we're going to tell all our parents for Christmas, you know, 1971. That don't give us any presents or any, like, you know, woolen socks or anything like that. We want to have money so we can, you know, put together money and go and buy instruments. So
right.
I managed to get enough money that I thought I was going to be able to buy a bass. And then we went with my friend, you know, I mean, not very much money, but at the time it seemed like a fortune. And then we went to the store, but unfortunately the bass cost just like, you know, $20 more than I had. And my friend had the $20 more. So he just said, well, I guess I'll buy the bass and you have to buy the guitar. And I was like, oh shit, I have to buy the guitar. Okay. And then I bought the guitar and then we started a band. And actually in 1972 already, we were playing a band. We were doing Santana covers. We were doing some Zappa songs. Zappa was actually a very important influence then when we started playing electrically. So that was like one of my big heroes, Frank Zappa and of course, Jimi Hendrix.
Wow. Did this band have a name?
It had a terrible name. It was it was Bilharzia, which is the disease you can get from drinking impure water from the Ganges.
Yeah, that's an inside joke. and can you remember the
bad first names?
How do you spell it?
B-I-L-H-A-R-Z-I-A. Bilharzia.
Yeah, that's hard. Bilharzia.
Yeah.
So what was
but
first?
It looked good. You know, it looked printed. It looked pretty good. You know, everybody was looking for the craziest names. I mean, they didn't. They only got. I mean, by the time we were getting around to the Dead Kennedys, then that one, when names started to get real crazy.
Yeah. Bilharzia.
Yeah. It sounded like Bill Hart the cowboy.
Right. Bilharzia's first gig. What was it like, Raoul?
It was great. That was the first time we had, you know, we had rented amplifiers and we were playing in a youth club. And that was a great experience. And I just loved it. It was great to be playing with loud instruments. And we had a drummer. He played the same comp. It was doom, doom, da, doom, doom, da, doom, doom, da. And that was every song. And if it was a slow song, it was doom, doom, da, doom, doom, da. And it was a fast song, of course, doom, doom, da, doom, doom, da, doom, doom, da. But it worked, you know. We played around it. It was fine.
That's great. And so you weren't scared?
No.
No, I asked because I'm scared shitless when I go up play, even after 40 years.
But, a strange thing that I guess I never, I mean, I suppose there were some gigs that I was a little bit, when they were like an important gig, but that was much later. I mean,
I asked about the first one because you can only have one first gig, right?
yeah, something like that, yeah.
and did Bill Hertz record?
Somewhere, our guitar player has a recording, and I'm singing. In fact, I'm singing things like Jumping Jack Flash, and I'm singing, I don't know, some Help, I'm a Rock, the Zappa song. And I'm doing all sorts of things, but I'd really blush to have to hear it again because my voice was probably two octaves higher at the time,
But this was probably your first recording, maybe.
Yeah, but I know that it probably exists somewhere. Oh, and no. As a matter of fact, I was the comp guitarist and the singer in the band, and we had a solo guitar player who was really good. I mean, he was a really good guitar player. And as a matter of fact, he turned into one of the main studio technicians in Finland in pop and rock in the 70s and early 80s. And he recorded all the hits, like that. So he was a real music genius in a way. It was fun to work with him.
Oh, great. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, September 3rd, 2021, edition Watt Pedro Show special guest, Raul Bjorkenheim.
Excellent.
Okay. Hold tight for hour two. September 3rd, 2021, it's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. Oh,
I'm going to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm.
Watch for Pedro Show. We start off the second hour with Raul Bjorkenheim with Last Oracle. And then from Vietnam, Ran Kap Dui Collective, Distant People. From Sydney, Australia, Lucas and Bella with U is for Utracaria. What the fuck that is. And then Phantom City, Future Nights. Yeah, I should ask you about these projects. Phantom City, enlighten us, Raul.
Well, Phantom City was out of the blue. One day I got an email from a guy called Paul Schütze, who said that hey, he's heard my playing, and he'd love to do a project. He was putting together a project where he would be sending a tape, a 16-track multi-tape. It was like on one of these ADAT tapes, if you remember.
Oh,
it looked
yeah.
like a VHS
oh.
tape.
Yes.
But you'd get two of them, and then you'd have to have a studio that was that had that the devices in their studio. So he sent first to Bill Laswell tracks that he had devised. So he had put some beats and he put some atmospheres to start with. And it was going to be a project called Site Anubis. And so he started out with those tracks, and he sent it to Bill Laswell. Bill added two bass tracks. One of, you know, just a bass track, and the other one was more like a wah-wah crazy bass track. And then, I was the third person to get it. So then I started adding guitars, and he wanted to me to add a couple of guitars. If, you know, or even if I had other ideas, I could add as many as I like. So, On the track that you're going to be listening to or listen to,
we just
Future
heard,
Night.
Yeah, we just heard it.
Future, you just, oh, on Future Nights that you just heard, I play a 12-string guitar, you're playing a lot of harmonics,
yeah.
and then I play two lead guitars on top of it. But anyway, after that, the tape was then sent off to Dirk Wechtler, a drummer in Belgium, who plays with Gnawa musicians there. And then it was sent to Seattle, and Julian Priester added stuff there, trombone, and then it was added Lol Coxhill, you know, a very influential free jazz player in London, added saxophone, and then it finally ended up in Basel in Switzerland, where
sure.
Alec Buss added clarinet, and then he mixed it together with Paul Schütze, who then added some more atmospheres when he heard it, and it was really an exciting project to do, and I heard
well,
how he had mixed it, I was really...
I'm curious, what year?
This was... 1977 or 78.
So I thought so. So you were like ahead of the curve. I've made albums with people I've never even met, but you know we trade the files over the internet. This
yeah.
guy, you would the VHS tape traveled around. Very interesting. Same idea. You know, there's a lot of
yeah.
ways to do music. It's beautiful. Look, Krakatau. We didn't get to really talk about that when we played three of the tunes. So enlighten us, please.
Okay, well, I was playing when I let me see. There's about 1984. I got to participate in a workshop by a real famous Finnish free jazz drummer called Edward Vesala, who had a band. He started a band called Sound and Fury, which is basically he was mentoring a lot of us young musicians that were into that type of music. And he was a great great musician. You know, he's made lots of 10 albums for ECM, and and then we made an album for ECM in 87, which was called Lumi, which means snow. And I got to play guitar on that. That was like, for me, you know, I had listened a lot to ECM jazz and that type of stuff.
Sure.
Like guitar players like John Abercrombie and,
yeah,
of course,
incredible.
Pat Metheny and like that. And I was like really into it. So to be on an album on ECM, I felt like, wow, this is going to be the thing. So then, after that album, Edward said, why don't we do a trio record, you know, with some bass player. We have to find some bass player. And I was really excited about it. So I went around getting the money together for that. So I applied. In Finland, we have a very good arts system, so you can apply for grants to do recordings. So I did, and I got the grants. But then, as it turned out, I started getting into arguments with Edward because he wanted to dominate too much. So
too
at
much.
One point, I during a sound check, I got so pissed off at him that I shouted at him. Everybody in the band got real quiet because nobody had ever shouted at him before. And I was furious because he had said something really stupid. And then I threw a table at him.
Whoa!
And then I went off and my heart rate was like 273. And then when I went back to do the gig afterwards, I was sure that he was going to kill me. But then we stood at the opposite ends of the backstage, and then we hugged, and then we played the, probably the best gig of them all, and then I left the band. Wow. So then I had this money to do record with, and so at first I was going to do a trio record. So first we spent 3 days in a really top studio in Finland called Finvox. But I'm sorry, just to go back a little bit, the Krakatau name came because Edward said, man, you got to come up with some good name. I don't want it to be some bullshit name like Rob Bjork Tree or something. That would suck. So I came up, I watched the documentary. I think it was like one of these BBC nature documentaries about volcanoes. And then they talked about Krakatau. And I was like, wow, that's a good name
Krakatoa.
For a band.
Krakatoa.
Krakatoa,
yeah,
exactly.
There was a movie made, Krakatoa, East of Java, and they fucked up because it's actually West of Java. I mean,
and also in the original language, it's Krakatoa, I guess.
Yeah, of course, Hollywood. Come on, they ruined so much shit. Look, I want to.
But anyway, that's how Krakatoa started, and it started out. So we went for 3 days into a studio, and I spent all the money that I got in the grant, but then I wasn't happy with it. And I didn't know what to do because I was supposed to, you know, tell the people that gave me the grant what I did with the money. And I was like, you know, wringing my hands in anguish. And then the phone rang and suddenly I got a gig to write music for a play and play 70 performances on stage. So I spent like a half a year doing that and I made all the money back. And then I was able to take a whole new band into the studio after doing a few gigs with them. And that's the band that did Matinal. And the other piece that you've been listening to.
Okay, I want to play the Shadow Glow stuff, Ghosted Wall.
Thank you.
Swap for Pedro Show, that chunk of music, Shadow Glow, Ghost Through Wall, then our Al Margolis with Oct Guitar, and finally Blixt, Black Hole, and a little pun rock there, people, it's W-H-O-L-E, but Blixt, tell me about Blixt.
Well, after we had done the Phantom City recording with Bill, like I said, in 1977, then Bill was he seemed to be very enthusiastic about my playing. So one day I get a Federal Express box with 20 CDs that he sent me, and I was really impressed, and a very friendly card. And then I listened to them. I was like really excited about it. Then at one point he sent me a message. Oh, by the way, we played two or three live gigs with Phantom City, and that I got to meet him in person, and then we, you know, hung out a little bit. So then he invited me to do a record with Nicky Skopelidis, a guitar player who'd been with the Golden Palominos. They had a band that they did with Bill, and so we went to do this duo record for. We did a record for Alan Douglas originally.
Ah, yeah. And, oh, wow.
And it was supposed to be real. It was like the first recording that I was a part of where Bill said, okay, look, this is, we're aiming for, it's going to be an ambient, but, you know, with a groove type of record. So that's the record we did. It was called Revelator. And so that's how I got to really, you know, be in the studio with Bill a little bit more. And he was I found a really nice producer to work with. He just was really supportive. And if something wasn't good, you know, instead of saying that sucked, you know, you should get a job washing windows or something.
Jesus, he said, tables.
No, he wouldn't say that. He'd just say, yeah, well, yeah. It's a little bumpy. You want to do it again?
I met the man. He's very kind. Very, very yeah. Nice man. Yeah, I agree. But I don't understand how this fits into Blixt.
Because Bill Laswell plays on Blixt.
Oh, okay.
So it was a project that I suggested to Steve Feigenbaum at Cuneiform, because I'd been playing together with a drummer called Morgan Ågren, who's an amazing Swedish drummer. One of his stories is that he when he was really young, a teenager, he loved Zappa's music, and he had sent letters to Frank Zappa. And then when Frank Zappa played in Stockholm, he had invited them backstage to say hello to the band. And of course, Morgan was really excited about it. And then Frank said to Morgan, hey, you want to come and play a song? What can we play together? And, I think it was some song from, it was Waka Jawaka, I think, that they chose to play. And then this young Morgan goes up on stage and he blows everybody away by playing the song exactly right, you know. And, so that was one of his stories. But anyway, I played with him a couple of times. Morgan, we played a recording with Trevor Dunn.
Good bass man.
Yeah, great bass player. That was called Box. And that was like a year or two before we did Blixt. So I had a connection with both Bill before and then with Morgan Ågren from later on. And then I suggested this to them first, of course, that would you like to do this project? And then I asked Steve, would he be interested? And he was. And it actually, then it turned out to be very good. We did it in Bill Laswell's studio in Orange, New York. It was fun.
Okay. Not Orange, New Jersey?
Yep. No, it's actually Orange, New York.
Okay. I've driven through Orange, New Jersey. And a friend of mine, Ray Farrell, that's why. There's oranges everywhere, like where Disneyland is here, right, Orange County.
We're
in the second hour, September 3rd, 2021, Dish Wap Pedro Show special guest, Raul Bjorkenheim. Hold tight for hour three. September 3rd, 2021, third hour, Wap for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Pedro Show. Started off third hour, Scorch Trio. With, now, this isn't Lugnut, people. This is Lugupt. And then we had Interruption of the Uncertainty Principle, Test for 8 Out of Phase Oscillators from Francisco Marino. Excuse me. Francisco. Lo siento. And then finally, The Sky is Ruby, Umo Big Band. So, Scorch Trio. Raul?
You want me to tell you about Scorch Trio?
Until I learn how to read minds, please use words.
Okay. This is a great interview. I like this. We should read each other's minds and just be quiet for 2 hours. No. I like it better this way, the voluble one. Scorch Trio was a band. I heard a bass player at a gig called Ingebrigt Håkaflaten, who was playing at the time. It was one of his main instruments, of course, is acoustic bass. A great Norwegian bass player. I heard it at a gig, and then afterwards, I said, "Hey, man, it would be great to play together." And you know, usually that doesn't usually lead anywhere. But we actually communicated. This was in the year 1999, just before the millennium, and then we kept in touch, and then eventually I got a 2-day. Radio session here at the Finnish National Radio, and you know they were going to get paid for it too, so, to make a radio show. So I asked Ingebrig, "Do you have any drummers in mind that we could play with?" And he said, "Okay, we have." He plays it together with a guy called Paul Nelson Love. So both guys then came to Helsinki, and the first thing we did, we met in the studio, and we played about an hour of music, which eventually wound up on a record that came out.
Wow, first jam,
you know, and it was totally improvised. There was nothing written.
I dig it big time. What about Umo Big Band?
And Umo Big Band is the band that I, you know, because I like the idea of writing music too.
Sure.
So I wrote this suite called Primal Mind, because I thought that the music was going to be a little bit primal, but it was. Still, it was like pretty much influenced by Stravinsky. There was some influence of Lutoslavsky, so you know, modern composers, but then sure. Jazz and rock in there too. And I did this recording, and it's a 1-hour piece, and it's pretty intense. So that was a really fun thing to do together. And Umo means the new music orchestra. It's a Finnish big band that's been around for, I guess, what, 30 years or something like that, maybe even 35.
Oh, great. Okay, here's obviously a personal project, the Raoul Bjorkenheim Ecstasy with Heads and Tails. Some more puns here, right? Tails without the eye, people. This is like a story, not a piece of anatomy.
Thank you.
SWAT for Pedro show. Last music for this edition. Heads and Tails. Raul Bjorkenheim, Ecstasy. Then Yuki Kawano with Everyone, Everyone. Finally, Solar Winds, interpreting Mr. Coltrane's Joy. Off air, you were starting to tell me about Raul Bjorkenheim, Ecstasy.
Well, it was one of my favorite jobs. I'm one of the few musicians that, or I guess we're quite a few of those actually, that love teaching. I just love it. I think it's one of the greatest things to do. I love, meeting young people. These are university level students that I teach, so they're very motivated. And in one of my improvisation ensembles, I had these incredibly talented players, the bass player then and saxophone player who then later on became part of my band Ecstasy. And it started out just as a jam. I invited them some weekend to come and jam with me, and then we played, and it was like, yeah, I want to have a band with these guys. And then we put it together. And so then Steve Feigenbaum was willing to have us release the records on Cuneiform. So we actually released three records on Cuneiform. And Heads and Tails is from the second one, which was called Out of the Blue, which actually has a great record cover. It shows a guy riding a horse entering a kitchen. And that was Ecstasy. And Ecstasy has been the band that we've been consistently playing with, even though now, of course, with the COVID period, we've had a long break. But we actually have a gig coming up in 2 weeks, and then in April we have a 2 week tour. So that's going to be fun.
Where can people find you on the internet, Raul?
They can find it on my name. It's www.raulbjorkenheim.com. So if it's on your website, you might put
that.
A link to that.
Raul, you should spell that for people.
It's www.raulbjorken, like Nancy, HEIM, like man, and then .com. So it's my name without no capital letters, just raulbjorkenheim.com. And then you'll find there's a good page with media.
Who I forgot to ask you about was Shadow Glow. What was that project about?
Oh, well, when I moved to New York in August 2001, just in time to be there for September 11th, and it was a very shocking experience, of course, for everybody. But for me, moving from Helsinki, the quietest town in the world, in a way, to New York, and then to be in the middle of that madness, it was crazy. But decided to live on there, and stayed there for 7 years. And during that time, I met a whole bunch of people, and it was Henry Kaiser who had played together with Lucas Ligeti. They had played a record called Yo Miles.
Klein's on there.
Yeah, right. So when I was living in New York, then Henry sent an email to Lucas and an email to me and introduced us. And so we got together and we had a session, and we found that we have a lot of things in common. We're both of us very interested in modern contemporary, so-called classical music. I'd prefer to just use contemporary music. And then we'd go to concerts together, and then we played a lot of gigs, like a duo gig, because we found that we have a lot more freedom to come up with ideas, but just the two of us. And he's very interested in African rhythms, and I'm interested in African rhythms. I've actually played with Senegalese musicians to quite a lot, in Finland. We have a whole community of Senegalese guys here, and it's the greatest thing. I just love playing with that type of music. So we put some of that type of sound in what we did, but the piece that you listened to, Ghosted Wall, was probably one of my first real avant-garde pieces when I'm scratching the strings and using different sounds that wouldn't be maybe normally. That was when I was starting to really, develop, like a new, vocabulary for myself on the guitar. So that piece is I sent that to you because that for me a turning point in a way.
Yeah, I was going to say a sea change.
Yeah,
Raul, somebody just getting into music. Now I'm not just talking young people because some people start music way later. But what kind of advice would you have somebody getting into music?
Well, I mean, I think the old saying that you don't choose music, music chooses you. So if you I think that if anybody wants to start with music in order to get rich, I'd tell them, hey, the richness is in the doing, and it's in the road, And if you manage to make a lot of money on that, that's fine too. And if you manage to make a living, that's already pretty good. But I mean, especially if you do the type of thing that I've been doing, I've just been doing the music that I choose and that I love. So I haven't really had I guess in that sense, not really a big commercial, juggernaut, you know, but I've, at least I've been happy to do what I've been doing. And I always feel that I stand behind the music that I do. So I would say that if you have a music that you love to do, then that's what you have to do. And I would say it's the best thing to do. Like when I started as like 13, 14, like that, and started playing in a band, I never had any problem with what to do with my time when I was a teenager. You know, never. There was always practicing new songs, listening to records, hanging out with my musician friends, rehearsing. Ah, that's the best thing. So I, you know, anybody who wants to play music, do it.
So in a couple other words, it's like make music your focus if you want to get into music.
That's exactly what I'd say. Yep.
Okay. I think that's fucking great. That's beautiful. And, you know, like I said, I don't think you just have to be a child prodigy. Maybe Joe Baez was 27 years old when he started guitar. Then a few years later, he was transcribing Charlie Parker's solos. So that's why I'm saying, you know what? This thing of like the young prodigy, I think music, like Vincent, right? He starts painting the last 10 years of his life. I don't think everything has to come young. So that's why I asked you for that advice for people out there. So what if you ain't a kid? It's never too late to get into music. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Very kind of you.
It was my pleasure. It was really fun talking to you, man, and nice to meet you in this way. Perhaps one day we'll actually meet in the California Peninsula.
Or the Finnish Peninsula.
The Finnish Peninsula, yeah. When you come here with a band, man, you just let me know, and I'll be there.
Okay, big love. People, it's been September 3rd, 2021, edition of Wattpedo Show. Give you power, right?